Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats. This is a podcast for women over 40 who are looking for sane and frank advice about their health and wellness, especially through menopause. I'm Amanda Thebe, the original resilient bitch and menopause guru. In my work as a personal trainer and nutrition coach, and through my own personal experience, it became obvious to me information about menopause and this curious phase of our life was so ridiculously hard to find. And that's why I started this podcast. Join me every week as I speak to health and wellness experts on hot topics that directly impact you. I've made it my mission to help you by exploding a few myths, presenting you with the facts, and hoping to inspire you to be a healthy, strong person just like me. If you like this show, please subscribe and leave a review. Then go and tell your friends, and then go and tell your husband, and then tell the neighbor, and then don't forget to visit me at fitandchips.com. And now let's get started on today's show. Hi, welcome back to this week's episode of Fit and Chips Chats. I have Susan Niebergall on the show, and I'm so proud of myself because I said your name right. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So I invited Susan on the show today because I was saying to her, I was late to the game finding her. And then when I found Susan, I realized she's this absolute rock star that everybody else follows. I don't know which rock I've been hiding under. And the reason Susan's so popular on social media is because of just the work she puts out is so useful. It's so relatable. Susan's so inspirational because she's nearing 60. She's nearing 60 like I'm nearing 50, and she's jacked and she looks so, so amazing. But you also just talk about like the most practical things and like how you got there and how you got on this journey. And I think that that's why people love you so much, right? Because you're just like, dude, I'm keeping it real. And, you know, I'm nearly 60, but look at me. It's really the ladies that I think find you as inspiring, because we can see that you've transformed not just your body, but your life. And just now you're sharing that with people. So firstly, welcome to the show, Susan.
Thank you so much for having me.
And lots we can talk about. What I really would like to start with was sort of like, we would chat it off, off air, but just about like how you got to where you are, because you were working in a school for 30 years and now your career is in fitness, but it's quite transformative, the not just your career, but just the way your whole like life has changed because of it. Can you just talk a little bit about like where you started and where you are now?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. I started back in the 80s, 85, 86, 87, something like that. And actually, I started with Jenny Craig. Back when Jenny Craig actually first came onto the scene, they were like Weight Watchers' real big competitor back then. And so I hopped on Jenny Craig, and I lost like 50 pounds with Jenny Craig. However, those 50 pounds kept reappearing in various increments, you know, on and off for the next 30-some, however many years. So the nutrition piece was always the piece that was kind of missing. I became a gym rat back in the 80s too. And I was telling you off air, I hired my first trainer in 96 who took me up through when my son was born. And then I had trainers after that on and off. And so I became a gym rat. I had a passion for just working out. I loved it. But I never really made the permanent progress because the nutrition piece just was never there. I yo-yo dieted. I was the ultimate yo-yo dieter, losing and gaining the same 20 to 40 pounds over and over and over. And, you know, when I lost it, it was like, yes, this is it. This is it. And then slowly but surely it comes back on, and then I lose it again or part of that. And then, you know, it was that whole typical cycle. So for all of you out there that have been yo-yo dieters, I have too. I mean, that was a real significant part of my life. And really, I kept that pattern up for quite some time. I decided, because I loved working out so much, and I was a school counselor, so I talked to people all the time. That was kind of what I did, that those two would mesh really well together as being a fitness pro. So that's why I went and got certified. And then I started doing training people part-time. After school was over, I would leave school, go to the gym, train some people till like 8 o'clock at night. And I just did that.
Oh my God. The hours. Yeah. It's a rite of passage. We've all done it.
I think so. It was great experience. You know, I learned a lot actually from that, but I look at pictures of me and honestly, I saw a picture of me, my little gym uniform shirt. And I looked at I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that's what I looked like back then. I was much heavier than what I am now, not nearly as lean as I am now. And it boggles my mind that I was on this yo-yoing path for almost all my life in some degree or another. So that went on and on and on. And I met up with a local trainer here who kind of ignited a bit of a fire under me, a little fire that got me kind of training a little bit different. And so I started dropping a little bit of weight. It was not, and I don't even know how much because I didn't really even have a scale, so I don't know. But things were fitting me different. So I kind of started that. And then I met Jordan. And I brought Jordan on as
my... And we should say Jordan Snyder. He's a bit of a rock star.
He's still my coach to this day. He and I started working together just on the fitness piece of this, and everything just changed from then on. And so I'm totally a different person in how I look at things, how I handle my nutrition now. Obviously I've gotten very strong. Just learned so much from him. He totally has changed my life. I credit him with that all the time. It's been truly remarkable, really being 50. When did we meet? 54, I guess maybe I was, or 55 when he and I first hooked up. That we could make significant changes late in life. And I tell people this, that it just doesn't matter really how old you are. You can still make significant changes to your body, to your mind, to your health. It's just not too late. It may feel like it sometimes. I thought it was for me. I thought my metabolism was slow, and I blame that for everything, for every nutrition mistake I made. And come to find out, no, that wasn't really it at all for me. I know some people do have diagnosed issues. I did not. It was just a matter of finding the right person to help me with some tough love and some pushing out of my comfort zone to get me to do things differently, to try things differently, to fail, to give myself the opportunity to fall flat on my face and get myself up and hit it again. And that's huge.
Yeah, and I think, oh my gosh, there's so much we can talk about there. So let's just go through. I've written about 20 notes there. So first of all, let's take it back to the yo-yo dieting. Yeah. I mean, I'm very opinionated on this because we know that while people do well on Weight Watchers and Jenny Craig at the time, Slimming World's another one in the UK that's quite popular, inevitably, people have to keep going back because they keep falling off the wagon, so to speak. And one of the main components I believe that's missing is the educational element, because people are just being told what to do almost like lab rats and without any autonomy, without any choice. Yeah. Being told that you can eat something with a red dot next to it isn't education. Like, that's bullshit. It drives me crazy.
It's total bullshit.
So, like, is that what you think was the problem with you? Is that what was happening?
100%. Because, you know, with Jenny Craig, you buy their food.
Oh, right. It's one of the, I didn't know that. I don't know Jenny Craig. Okay.
So I like to equate it from an education perspective as, it's like me giving you the answers to a test. You can probably pass the test, but you're not going to be ultimately successful down the road if you want to try to apply anything that you had to learn from that test. Which is exactly what's happening. They gave me the answers to the test. They gave me the food. I ate it. It worked. I had temporary success.
But you didn't learn anything. Yeah.
I didn't know how to go to a restaurant and maybe make better choices. I didn't know anything about portion control. And that is generally where most people struggle, not having that kind of baseline knowledge. And so that's the problem with, I think, with something like Jenny Craig. I mean, did I lose weight? Oh, of course I did. Sure.
It's probably like 1,200 calories.
I don't even want to
bloody
know.
Day or something.
It was ridiculous.
And so how did that approach change for you then? So like the nutritional components. So what was your sort of like nutritional light bulb moment? Do you think?
I would consider myself a healthy overeater. I was very restrictive with my food vocabulary. I had a select few foods that I ate all the time. And I know research shows that our bodies tend to respond to basic stuff. So there's a component to that was not bad. But mine was ultra restrictive. And the problem on top of that was that I never would stick my toe outside of that little ring, ever. Like, and this is a great example. In my school, in our office, when it was our birthdays, people would take turns bringing in cupcakes or a little cake or something to celebrate the person's birthday. And we'd all gather, sing happy birthday and so on. And they'd be passing out cake. And I never, ever, ever, ever would take a cupcake, a cookie, a piece of cake. And everyone told me, Susan, you are so disciplined. Like that fed this huge issue that I was having as being a good thing, and it was not a good thing, but everyone said, oh, you're so disciplined, and it's like they admired it. And at the time, I'm like, wow, yes, I am. I can turn down this, but inside, I'm dying.
Well, inside, you've got a borderline eating disorder. That's what it sounds like to me. Yeah. Like if you've been so restrictive.
I'm just so restrictive. Yeah. Then when I would like take something, I would feel horrible for it. Like I would feel horrible for it. And to the point where on one year it was my birthday and I didn't even take anything on my own birthday. I made an excuse that I was not feeling well or I was sick or I don't even remember what it was. I only did that once, but I remember doing that. And at the time I didn't really think much about it. I look back on it now and think, wow, that was kind of nuts, you know? And now that I am free of all of that disordered thinking about food, the good food versus the bad food and the healthy versus the unhealthy and all of that. And now that I know portion sizes, I totally look back at that time thinking, wow, that was insane is what it was. And I was thinking, and here's the thing, I was thinking I was doing the right thing because I was eating all really healthy foods. I mean, if you looked at my little menu list, it was all great stuff. But what I never did was kept track of how much of that great stuff am I eating? You know, like how much olive oil am I putting on there? How many avocados have I had? You know, how many almonds do I eat during the course of a day? Things like that, you know, handful here, handful there, handful there, you know, all the time thinking, well, almonds, that's good fat, you know?
but it's one of those things that you can very easily fall into the mindless eating trap. I mean, because I see my husband, he's like, I'm like in the 10 almond range and he's easily eating 30, 40 of them because he just eats them like Smarties and, too much of a good thing. So, but how do you sort of, then dial in the nutrition without, and I didn't mean to say you had an eating disorder, by the way. I was not trying to be flippant because I just realized that sounded really shitty the way I said that. But I just know that that restrictive mentality does cause a disordered way of thinking. Yeah. But what I was going to say is then how then do you then go from being this restrictive eater and then to understanding portion control, but then without becoming too restrictive in that? Because it's still the same type of mindset. But how do you then now do it?
It's interesting. You dial back a couple of years when I looked at my belly and I was in my bathroom and I just started to cry because I'm like, I feel like I'm doing everything right. I'm busting my ass in the gym 6 to 7 days a week, really, really working hard in the gym. I'm eating healthy stuff. And look at me, I look ridiculous. I'm a fitness professional and I look horrendous. So then I started thinking, it has to be my metabolism. That's it. It's my metabolism. So I go to my doctor. We have a chat about this. And she kind of gives me that skeptical look. But she ran a whole blood panel for me. My metabolism was just fine, came back just fine. And she looked at me and she just said, Susan, your metabolism, there's nothing wrong with it. You have a perfectly normal metabolism. She said, you're just eating too many calories. And literally, I just sat there, my jaw was on the floor. I just started to cry because I had never heard anyone tell me that. And I had never, I think that was the first time. I mean, that was some tough love, hard to accept. And I didn't know how to react. I let it sink in. And I think at that point, it was like, I have to own this. I have to own this. I have to change something. I mean, and honestly, at the time, I didn't know what to change. I didn't know how to do it. And that's when Jordan kind of came into my life shortly after that part, not right at that part, but after that part, where I'd started making a little progress kind of on my own. And really, I didn't work with Jordan too much with nutrition because I still wasn't 100% like,
yeah. Yeah, you're such a bitch saying that horrible thing to me. I'm just going to, see how that goes.
I think I might be able to do it. And so, but I listened to every single thing he said, every single thing he told other people, everything he wrote, everything he's been on a podcast, whatever. I mean, I just absorbed all of his information and I started just applying it, you know? And he and I just worked on the training piece and we would talk a little bit about the nutrition piece. And that's when things started to change. Like, and I would fail miserably, make no mistake. I had my issues, but over time I have learned to, track calories. I'd never done that before. I had refused to do it before. I thought it was going to be cumbersome. I thought it was going to take the joy out of eating. I thought it was going to be miserable, and it was none of those things for me. And just to add, I don't use an app. I either write it on a piece of paper or I put it in a spreadsheet on my computer. That's how I track. I'm not an app girl. I have nothing against them. It's just my generation and apps. It's not my natural go-to, you know? It's just not. For me, and that was what was working for me. So to this day, that's what I use. When I do track, I pull up that same.
And do you think that if women who are listening to this or men listen to this want to start doing the tracking the calories, that that's something they need to do long term, or is it something that they can just do like for initially just so that they start understanding? I mean, it's because one of the things is a lot, you know, we know that calories isn't an exact science, but we know that it's very easy to underestimate what you're eating. I mean, I believe you posted something the other day on Instagram that I just thought was so great. And it was like what you think you're eating and what you're actually eating. And it was a difference of about 500 or 600 calories a day. And it was literally by just having that extra teaspoon of peanut butter, by having the butter cooking your eggs and la-di-da-di-da-di-da. It soon adds up, right? But then there's the other camp that of people that are like saying, well, that isn't a great way of like progressing, because we don't want to continually have women like being obsessed with calories. Like, I can't eat. So I'm trying to, where's the middle ground, Susan? Like, so you don't want to say to someone, okay, you're going to eat 1,850 calories today. That's what your goal is going to be, give or take 100 calories. But so how does that work?
Here's what I like to do, tell people to do first if they've never tracked. I like to just have them write everything down that they eat, period. Just get an awareness of what's going in your mouth. Every bite of something, like put, I had a bite of a cookie or whatever. I mean, write it all down so you can see, because that alone is education, is how much food you're putting in your mouth. And then you can start attaching calorie numbers to it. And then you'll get an idea of, well, I'm taking in X number of calories right now. And if the scale's going up, then you're probably in a bit of a surplus. If the scale's kind of staying where it is, you're probably in your maintenance zone. And if it's going down, okay, well, then you may be in a deficit. But it's a great baseline just to kind of know what you're actually doing, and you can go from there. But I tell people this, I don't think there's anybody on the planet. Well, I shouldn't say that. There are people that love data and love to track and love to do these kind of things, but most people probably don't. I'm one of those. And it is not something I think people need to do forever, but I do think it's necessary for a while at some point just to learn calorie, portion size, relationships. And if you want to put protein in as a macro that I have all my clients track, that kind of relationship in 3 ounces of chicken has this many grams of protein. And you just start learning that. That and getting a food scale so you actually can visualize, this is what 4 ounces looks like. I thought it was, 2 ounces or something like that. You know, you're eating 6, but it's really 4. And so the calories are actually closer to 300 instead of 160 or whatever, it's just the education, short-term education, long-term benefit.
Yeah, that's great. And then of course, moving forward, you sort of then get to be able to understand what the portion sizes sort of look like. And so, I mean, and if you're going, like to me, if I'm working with someone and they're truly just working with portion sizes, like I'm from the precision nutrition camp, that's where I did all my nutrition education. And so the portion sizes are based on visuals, like the palm of your hand, the size of your thumb, and all of these different portion sizes. But if you get to the point where people are working with you and that's still not working, then something's not quite there. And I think there's great benefit in looking at what the calories are that you are consuming. And one of the other main things that it's though is people grossly underestimate what they're eating, or maybe are not completely honest with themselves. And I have no problem saying that and calling people out, because I use an example from one of my clients who will never be named, but was basically, it's the same thing I hear all the time. I'm doing everything right. I'm exercising, 3-4 times a week, and I don't overeat and blah, blah, blah. So I got her to do a food diary for me, and she was consuming 2 bottles of wine a week. Yeah. Didn't even consider that to be an issue.
Yeah, because it's liquid. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. And it does matter, of course. Yeah. But
I have a lot of my clients right now, and Jordan and I use this a lot in our inner circle too, where we do a calendar that every day that they hit their calories on target, their protein on target, and their workouts, they put a big red X on that day. So they have to hit all three components. And usually we set them up with a calorie range to hit, not a number. Who's ever going to hit 1850 cal, no one. So a range. So you have a better chance of succeeding as opposed to missing the target all the time. I think that's a big mental piece to this too. So you hit your calories, you hit your protein, you hit your workout, you put a big red X. You don't hit one of those, you put a black circle. And so no day is blank, and you visually get to see every week, how consistent am I really being? And that is assuming accuracy of tracking and everything is close to on point, nothing left out or whatever. And that little level of simple accountability can be game changers for people. If you're a late night eater and you want to grab that whatever at night and you're like, oh, wait a minute, if I eat this, I'm not going to be able to put a red X. No, I hear that all the time for some little calendar that has a little red.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I have clients do little smiles. They even buy stamps with smiley faces and sad faces. And I love that. In fact, the one person who's listening to this is going to know I'm talking about her, and she's going to get a bit of a kick out of that. But I like it because it means that, to me, I work more with, how she's been and her energy levels and stuff at the moment. But regardless of what you're tracking, it does make a difference to have that accountability, right?
It does. And I think kind of back to what you said, the whole tracking accuracy. I think that is a learned skill too. I was guilty of that. Just, the peanut butter one is the one that gets me to this day when you see what an actual tablespoon of peanut butter is versus what we made a sandwich out of. I'm sorry, those aren't the same.
I have to be honest, I blame North Americans for this, because the UK do not eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. In fact, the first time I ever heard that was on Starsky and Hutch.
Oh yeah?
And I was like, who puts jelly in a sandwich? Because jelly is your jello. Like, I mean, this is all lost in translation. So I'm thinking of a bowl of jelly or jello with peanut butter in bread. And I'm thinking, those Americans are fucking freaks, I'm telling you. But anyway, so I to this day don't eat peanut butter purely because of traumatizing TV as a kid. So I don't, so I honestly have no sympathy for you overeaters of peanut butter, but we, yeah, moving on swiftly.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of the women listening to this might be going through menopause, and you're 58, going on 59. Looks, you look amazing. You did have some challenges going through menopause, but they weren't super extreme, but you did, it wasn't a phase that you sort of went through and took lightly, right? You know, you did have some issues. I had on the show, I was talking to you a little bit about this. I had on the show last week, and it'll be aired before this episode, Dr. Roseanne Woods, and she has just become a PhD by producing a paper showing the effects of building lean muscle and it reducing the amount of hot flashes specifically. Mm-hmm. And it was up to 70% improvement in women's symptoms if they had low lean body mass. Now, you never really suffered from hot flashes, did you?
Not really, no.
You had the night sweats, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I was more the night sweat girl. And I talked to my doctor about those, too. And she said, you know, we could put you on whatever medication if you want. Because I honestly just don't think it's necessary. But if you want to try it, we can and whatever. And I'm just like, you know, I didn't really, nah. I just kind of said, no, I'll just basically suffer is what I was thinking. but once I did start really getting into a routine and not, and I guess I should say before Jordan, I was working out 6-7 days a week, killing myself in the gym. I mean, killing myself in the gym. He scaled me back to 4 days and I was like in a withdrawal. Like I was going to go apeshit crazy because I didn't know what to do on rest days. And I remember texting him saying, it's a rest day. What can I do? And he goes, rest. and then I kept hemming and hawing and he goes, okay, go to the gym. You can hop on a bike or something and pedal, but don't let your heart rate get above this, that, and the other and whatever. I'm like, okay, so I'll do that. And I went and it felt hard. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm just trying to say I went from 6 days hard to four. And that's what I do now. 4 days a week. I don't do anything on the other 3 days. And having some menopausal symptoms, they really, I don't want to say it went away, but it certainly lessened it to the point I remember one night thinking, wow, I haven't had to get up in the last, like, I don't know how many nights, you know? So I noticed a big difference for me, just for that. Could it be related to a bunch of different things? I don't know. Cause I didn't really, you know, I didn't really keep track of things like that, that maybe would have been fascinating to try to track, but,
Well, I'm like nodding away like crazy too, because I mean, I think that sounds like twofold. I think one, you've like cleaned up your nutrition probably, which really does help us. And additionally, we know about the lean body mass helping to reduce the symptoms, but you're also resting. And our ability to actually recover during menopause is lessened. We actually do need longer recoveries. Now you've just given yourself 3 whole days. You might be doing the low intensity steady state, like the LISS type, but good. Like you probably need that just to stabilize everything and just recover and regenerate. But but like
trying to walk a little bit, but more not with this crazy cold weather, but yeah, I'm not a great walker. I want to learn how to do that because I think when the weather gets better, I would love to just be able to go outside and walk and just move a little bit. But rest has been a difference maker just with my training. Oh, I mean, what a difference with my training. I get asked every day how often I work out. And when I tell people 4 days a week, what else do you do? And I'm like, I don't. That's just it. I don't. Literally, I don't do anything. Tomorrow, like I'm going to the gym later today. Today's a normal workout day for me. Tomorrow is not. I won't even set foot in there, you know? Yeah. And it's, it took a while to adjust because I was that more is better girl, you know? And that was driven out of fear, by the way. And I recognized it even at the time. I was afraid that if I didn't work out that hard, I was going to lose my progress and gain weight. And the irony was, I really wasn't losing any progress. I wasn't gaining any progress either. And my weight was slowly creeping up. So it, you know, I'm just thinking the more, I've got to do more. I'm not doing enough. I was focused on totally the wrong thing. I was focused on my exercise fixing my issues. It was my nutrition that I needed to really fix first and then back that piece off.
And so there's two things I want to pull from that, which is great. So first of all, I'm just curious, like how those workouts looked differently. So you had your 6 days a week doing what you were doing, and then you've got your 4 days a week now. I mean, do they even look completely different? I mean, were you even working out in the most efficient, effective way you could previously?
No. I was going high volume and like deadlifts, 6 to 8 sets of deadlifts, as heavy as I could go. You know, I actually got injured doing that as well. And then if it wasn't deadlifts, it was squats. And if it wasn't squats, I was trying to do, I was working on, it's so interesting, I was trying to get my first chin up too. And I was working upper body. I was just doing everything, lots and lots and lots of reps and sets. Couldn't get a chin up to save my life. Could not get one to save my life. And that's something I'd always wanted to do because I was always that weak kid who could never do it. And then when I first started with Jordan, my first program from him had assisted chin-ups on it because we had talked about that was a goal for me. And we were going to have a blizzard here in DC, literally a blizzard. I'm like, shit, I can't even get to the gym. You know, what am I going to do? My chin-up bar is right outside the door here. You know, I said, okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to put on my stuff. And I went out in a blizzard and did my reps. For my first program, because I didn't want to start off not being able to do something. And that's kind of where it started. And his programming for me, and literally I would do them maybe once a week and sometimes twice a week, different variations. And then we programmed all different kinds of pulling exercises. I mean, we just methodically did that. And so now, yeah, chin-ups, I'm doing weighted chin-ups now. And so it's one of those things, you get smarter. I didn't do more. I did less, but I was smarter. He was smarter with how it was all programmed and designed for me. And I think that's the whole, more is not better. It's a big mistake to think that. And so many people think that. It's better is better. And I put up a post not too long ago about how nutrition is the driver of your fat loss car and training is the passenger. And you will never cross the finish line if that driver is not in charge. You know, that's the first priority. You know, you will die without the driver of your car. You know, you will not get your goal. So people always focus on the weight training and how can I change that? And that's the difference, you know, when they want to ignore admittedly the harder part is the nutrition component, you know.
Yeah.
What you do in the gym is the easier part, maybe the more fun part too for most people.
Oh yeah, nobody ever got excited about dieting, darling.
Yeah, no, calories, no, absolutely not. So, I mean, I understand it because I was the same way. I get it. I can relate to every single woman that reaches out to me because of that. Because I did the same thing.
And then as far as the nutrition, the second part of the question I was going to ask you then is like, as far as the nutrition, I mean, we talk a lot about protein and I know for a fact through menopause that like how bodies start to do protein synthesis a little bit differently than before, purely because of the hormonal chaos that's happening. We just don't break them down and build them up as we used to. So we've got to make, and we don't store protein. And so we've got to continually make sure that we do have a good quality source protein in our body. That can be challenging for women. And I think that's purely because of eating and chewing and texture. Like this is just purely me just pulling this out of my arsehole. I don't know for sure, but I don't love chewing on a hunk of steak. And when I pose the question to like my listeners and stuff, I hear that same thing too. I think that a lot of us fit pros talk about prioritizing protein. Mm-hmm. So do you do that with your clients as well and yourself? Do you sort of say like, you know, I'm going to track my calories, but first of all, I'm just going to make sure I've got my protein. And how do you make that work?
People that if they're new to the protein game or at least thinking about it, I don't have them track protein right away. I have them, their goal at the beginning is to have lean protein at every meal. That's their goal. I don't care how much it is. It's just get used to having it at each meal. And breakfast always becomes the big question because
what do I have? Yeah.
It's this box that breakfast has sat in. And so I try to get them out of that box thinking and be a little more creative. Like, I mean, if you like chicken, or if you like meat, why not have it at breakfast? You can. There's no law that says you have to have a roll and butter and that's your breakfast, or a bowl of cereal. I mean, all that's fine, but if you need to include protein and eggs aren't your thing, I mean, some people are eggs okay, you know, they're okay with eggs, some aren't. You know, just trying to think out of the box for breakfast, because that's the hardest one maybe to get the protein in. But hit protein breakfast, hit it at lunch, hit it at dinner, get that first. Just get into that rhythm. And then we can start finding out how much you are actually consuming and try to set a goal. Like, okay, maybe you have 30 grams of protein at each meal. Let's start with that. Or, you know, they're like, 30 grams of protein. I don't know if I can do that. Make your 2 ounce piece of chicken three, you know, or make your half a cup of Greek yogurt a cup. You can start with that kind of way to increase your protein. It's honestly, I tell people, it's not as hard as what it sounds like at first. It's just new, and it seems like this mountain that you can't climb. It's
exactly.
Start. You just have to start up the mountain. You'll be there.
Yeah, and it really works as well because it fills you.
Yes.
I mean, it actually stops you eating as much, because if you eat all your protein, you're stuffed. That's my nemesis. Protein is always my nemesis. So I always do the whey protein just shake as a backup.
Yeah, sure.
And it really works for menopausal women as well, because it's actually one of the few proteins we do process well through our bodies. So it's hit that if you can eat whey protein.
I always recommend that if people are struggling to get it through food and whatever. Absolutely. Yeah.
And so, even to the end of our time, damn, I might have to get you back on. So you started really working with Jordan Syatt about 54, and that's when like things started to change for you. But I mean, you're the one doing the work. I don't want to give him all the credit. Damn it, it's you. You're the one who's like changed her life around, right? And so what I really want to sort of like try and touch on now is like it's never too late. Yeah. Because, you know, like it sounds like you had an okay-ish time through menopause. And I know a lot of women who are listening to this are having a really shitty time, and they can't even imagine what it's like to sort of like get back to the gym 4 days a week. But the symptomatic side tends to die down anyway. After perimenopause and like when they're in menopause. And so like, how can someone just start, right? Like just say they've been a gym rat and they've fallen off the wagon, or they've never done it. Hopefully by now they realize that building some lean muscle is something we really truly encourage. If for nothing else than osteoporosis, right? Let's get your skeleton, let's get it protected and supported. How would you say to that other 54-year-old woman that comes to you and goes, I've done nothing. What do I do? Where do I start? What are your like simple...
The first thing is I encourage people to move every day. I don't care what it is. You know, if you're not doing anything, you need to move every day. Whether that's a walk, whether you're getting on your treadmill or your bike or whatever it is you like to do. You could like to go to Zumba, go Zumba. If you'd like to do yoga, do yoga. Do something every day. Get that into a habit. And then after that, then I would encourage people, especially if they're new to weightlifting. And I just had a woman reach out to me this morning who is a stark naked beginner with weightlifting and was asking about coaching. And I said, you know, honestly, I always recommend people who've never done it, find someone in person first. I think having that confidence of that person next to you, taking you through proper technique when you're holding weight or you're trying to learn technique so you can hold weight, is essential to get a good start. And then ultimately you can learn to love it because you learned properly from the beginning. I think a lot of people just reach out to online because everything is at our fingertips now. You know, they go to this program or they go to that program or they reach out to this coach and that coach and they have no experience. And there are some coaches who are now coming out with beginner programs, which eventually, I think we're going to see more of that. But for now, I tell everyone, I would definitely hire, it doesn't have to be a ton of sessions, because I know it can get pricey, but it's worth the investment for you to get started that way, get used to technique, form, all that kind of stuff. And then if you want to join the Inner Circle or whatever online fitness community where you have support and accountability or whatever it is, then maybe that would be an appropriate place for you. Because I've seen people with no experience hire a coach and get so overwhelmed. They're at the gym on their own. They don't know their way around a gym. They are looking at their program. They can't remember what this is. They have to look at the video or whatever it is. And it's just like, what should have taken them 30 minutes to do takes them an hour and a half. And they're like, I can't do this. You know, it sounds good at the time to start that way. But I honestly think getting some ground level work at the with somebody and then move on, find yourself another coach if you want. But I'm all about finding coaches. Whether, and I tell people this, I don't care if you come to me or you come to you. I don't care who you go to. Whoever fits you is what's the most important thing. Because if you have a person that you don't feel connected to or whatever, you're not going to do anything anyway. You've got to have a connection. So regardless, if someone doesn't connect with me but connects with you, I am so happy to say go to Amanda, because that's how you're going to actually get moving and get over this hump, to have someone who will hold your feet to the fire, who will push you out of your comfort zone. And that is one of the biggest mistakes I see middle-aged women do, is they will not push themselves enough. They're stronger than they think. And without someone to hold them accountable, they don't do it. So long-winded way of saying, start with somebody in person, reach out to others, I think, get a good groundwork laid down for you, and then find somebody you connect to. And because I think accountability is prime for this.
Just, yeah, well, it sounds like using two things, habit and accountability, and that's key, right? It's the consistency, and just not going to happen overnight. Like, just do something. I'm the same. Like I said to people, just start moving. Even if that moving is just walking every day, like, to be more active than you currently are. We're a lazy fucking society. It's crazy. And so, like, just like the smallest thing counts. It all matters, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, you are a rock star. Thank you for coming on the show. That was really, really great. And thank you for inspiring people. Where can we find you? Should we head on over to Instagram? Is that the best place to find you?
I'm very active on Instagram. I'm also becoming a lot more active on Twitter. That's a whole other world.
I'm not going to do Twitter.
Instagram, Twitter. I have a website, SusanNiebergallFitness.com.
Yeah.
And Facebook, Susan Niebergall Fitness. It's all the same name.
Okay, that's great. So Niebergall. I had to write it down phonetically so I didn't mess the name
up. That.
Thank you. Take care. And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more information on my services, head over to my website at fitandchips.com. That's like fish and chips, FITNCHIPS.com. Or you can head over to my Fit and Chips Facebook page too. If you leave me a comment or if you contact me, I promise I'll do my best to respond to all of your questions. The views and advice expressed by myself in this show are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always go straight to your doctor. Take care. Love you. Bye.